Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Way too many people in this world right now aren't told that they are loved, who aren't told that they are appreciated. That's a large portion of why I do what I do.
Want to take you back to 2020, if you don't mind. During the height of the pandemic, a Louisiana school teacher picked up TikTok and started recreating their favorite wrestler entrances. This caught the imagination and stole the hearts of the wrestling community. He has since featured on WWE programming, The Bump, and is fast approaching 1 million followers on TikTok. We have him today for longer than 10 seconds. The Professor Nick Harrison is on Cultaholic Island. Professor, how you doing?
Mr. Campbell, it is always a pleasure to talk to you, my friend. You are looking gorgeous this morning.
Oh, stop it. Stop it. I have had, and I'm really struggling with this at the moment, since we got back from the holidays break, I've had brain fog. Like I'm half making cups of tea and then leaving the room to do some ironing and going, oh yeah, I was making a cup of tea there. I'm like forgetting people's names and like I don't know whether that's a normal thing for when we all come out of Christmas and New Year's where we all forget where we are, what day it is, what time it is. You must get that, right?
Yeah. Oh, I get it. All. As an educator, you know, we're out on holiday break now. I actually don't go back to work for a couple of days. So that's happening to me all the time. I'm waking up and I'm like, okay, is today Monday or Tuesday? So this is definitely something that I can relate to because I'm in a fog all the time. So that's nothing new. That's not just a holiday thing. That's a Harrison thing.
That's a Harrison fog. The finest of all the fogs. On the day this goes out, it's the Bills' last game of the season against the Jets.
Okay.
Thoughts on the season?
I am very proud of what the Bills have been able to do this season. I know that there have been a couple of missteps along the way. There's some things that need to be cleaned up. I sound like I'm playing. You know, we're just, you know, taking it one game at a time. You know, you don't worry about the games in the past. You worry about the game that's coming up. And it's just I'm very happy about how the season has gone, especially the fact that I actually got to go to Buffalo for a game, which was just amazing. To experience Bills Mafia en masse like that was absolutely incredible. And going to the New Orleans game as well for Thanksgiving was just incredible. It's been a great season. They've clinched the playoff spot. They win against the Jets and they win the division and get a home playoff game in the first round. So that's what we're looking to do. And you can't take any opponent lightly, especially a division opponent. So I'm looking forward to seeing how the game is going to turn out. But I'm confident that it'll be a Buffalo win.
What made you become a Bills fan?
This is a question that I've been asked all year because of things that have happened, especially when I was in Buffalo. They were like, wow, well, you're from Louisiana. So let's go back. I was in New Orleans for the game. We're out on Bourbon Street and a bunch of Bills fans are like, so when's the next time you're coming up to Buffalo? I was like, I've never been to Buffalo before. And they're like, you're a big fan. How have you never been to Buffalo for a game? It's like, I'm in Louisiana, man. I've grown up here. I started watching the Bills when I was 10 years old, watching Super Bowl 25, which is the infamous wide right game. where the kick goes to the right and the Bills end up losing the Super Bowl to the New York Giants, which is the first of four Super Bowls they lost in a row in the early 90s. And that's where my fandom began, is, you know, watching those Super Bowl games and just, you know, latching onto that team. And even after they lost that fourth Super Bowl and had the drought and all that stuff, I stuck around and I stuck with my team and just became much more of a diehard and just dug deeper and deeper into the lore of the Buffalo Bills. And that's, you know, then about a decade or so ago, Bills Mafia popped up on Twitter. And that's when the real fans started just pouring into it and said, okay, this is who we are. This is where we're going to be. And that's, you know, the table breaking and all that stuff that you've seen. But there's so much more than that. You know, that's what people see. And that's what they kind of, you know, associate Bills fans with. But if you, you know, pay close attention to the charitable efforts and, you know, donating the money after Trey White got injured during the game against the Saints, Thanksgiving, Bills Mafia decided to donate $27 a piece, which was Trey's number 27, to the Northwest Food Bank, Northwest Louisiana Food Bank, and ended up raising over $100,000.
Wow.
For Trey's favorite charity. And that's something that they tend to do, that Bills fans, Bills Mafia especially, tend to do on a regular basis. And we love giving back charitable efforts. You know, shout out to Bills Mafia and Dale Reed and the Bills Mafia babes, Kristen Kimmick, and all those guys. It's just, you know, I'm very proud to be a part of that fan base, because as people are starting to see, especially this year, it's one of the more kind, and they're a little wacky, but it's one of the more kind and generous fan bases that you're ever going to see in the NFL, and I'm proud to be a part of it.
But I think that's why we love them, because they are very wacky. Like there's such yes. a fun, like I got introduced to Bills Mafia through you. So it was yeah. me discovering that, and there is just such a wonderful community raising all that money for the food bank and just getting together and having a good time. And it's just the fact that you've never been to Buffalo before and they're like, hey, get in here! Get in here! Yeah. Get in here! Get amongst
it. It was like I'd been there for years. They embraced me and brought me in, and as soon as the game was over and I was leaving, the first question was, so when are you coming back? Oh. It's a very family atmosphere with Bills fans, and I'm very proud to be a part of them, and looking forward to the next couple of weeks.
Amazing. I'm getting a bit of a crackle on your microphone before we go any further.
Is that any better?
It might be scraping against your beard, possibly.
That's what it is.
It might be that. Let's see if I can bring it. I was trying to look, see whether you got a lapel mic in, but I think that's sorted it. Oh.
Is it back? Oh, here it is. Okay, here we go. Okay. Back in.
I think that sounds fine now. It was scratching against your gorgeous beard. That's all it was. I thought I'll nip that before we get any further, just in case.
Okay.
But that's all good.
The beard, man, it's always getting in the way.
But never always change it. Never change it.
No, I don't. Never.
It'd be horrifying to think of it. Not a horrifying thought. As well as being part of the Bills Mafia, as we've all discovered, you are a massive wrestling fan as well. Through your exploits on TikTok, it's just been a deep joy. We're going to get into all of that, because lots of people who are going to be listening to this today, watching this on our Patreon, will go, it's the guy off TikTok. It's the professor off TikTok. I want to get into all of it, but we've got the small matter of sending you to a desert island whilst we're here, Mr. Harrison. So we are going to send you to a desert island with three wrestling matches burned onto a DVD or a Blu-ray. I don't know. Well, you don't know what you do these days that you can watch whilst you are there. So I would like your first wrestling match, please, Mr. Harrison.
My first match will be from Hell in a Cell 2020, which was Roman Reigns versus Jey Uso. An I Quit match inside Hell in a Cell. And this is not a match that you would look at and say, it's not your five-star match, it's not your classic match, but the storytelling in that match and what it meant to the beginning of you know, the whole tribal chief Roman Reigns deal that we see now, and main event Jey Uso with what he was able to do. And the storytelling that they were able to do during the match, I just love. I watch that match on a regular basis, Tom. I'm not even kidding. Like, I go back and I watch that match all the time. Because if you remember, this was during the time of the Thunderdome. So they didn't have crowds there. So a lot of times, especially in matches like that, you had to really vocally tell the story along with tell the story with what you were doing in the ring. And just the way that Roman was talking to Jay during that match, it's just some of the more quotable things that Roman Reigns has said during this run as the Tribal Chief were said in that match, in that Hell in a Cell match. I even have a shirt with his picture with Afa and Sika at the end with him holding up the Universal title, and it says, "The Tribal Chief never quits." Because that's something that he said during the match. Like, the referee is asking Roman if he quits, and Roman's just half asleep on the mat. "The Tribal Chief never quits." No, not the Tribal Chief. The head of the table never quit. That's what he said. The head of the table never quits. And it's just the way that he was saying this stuff during the match. It reminded me of, you know, how villains at the end of movies or right before they're about to kill the protagonist, the hero, they give that long speech right before they do it. And Roman had this villain's speech at the end of the match. Because if you remember in the match, Roman basically told him throughout the match that he was going to end him if he doesn't acknowledge him. "You better acknowledge me. You need to acknowledge me. You need to quit. Acknowledge me before I end you." And Roman looked like he was really about to just end Jey Uso. Like, he's standing over him with the ring steps and leaning over his lifeless body and leaning over the ring steps while the ring steps are basically on top of Jay's neck. And he gives this long monologue of what he's about, of what he's, let me see. "Ever since we were little boys, ever since we were kids, you knew I was better. Now, I can understand back then you trying me, but we are 35 years old and you are still testing me."
It's like he's here.
Oh, God.
And that's the one thing that I think was really great about the Thunderdome, was because you didn't have that raucous crowd noise all around you. It was piped in. But what happened was then a lot of these wrestlers were able to have this really emotive dialogue in the match where they weren't trying to... Right. Because normally when, you know, as you know, when you're in the, you know, in a wrestling arena, like, the wrestlers will talk from the diaphragm so the back of the room can hear. It's, you know, it adds to that idea about wrestling being panto, because they're going, "I'm going to hurt him! Yes!" But in the intimacy of the Thunderdome, where they can't hear the crowd noise, they're talking softer. And there is more depth to what they're saying. And this match is the ultimate example of moments like 100%. That bit with the steel steps, as he's saying, "You're still trying me." And he's not talking like a wrestler. He's talking like a person talking to a family member. And the emotion in that match, because Roman's character as the Universal Champion is the greatest work I think he will ever do. Because in matches like that, like the one with Jey Uso, there is an aggression to him, but there's a sadness and there's a reluctance as well. Because he's like, "Look, I'm," the general idea being, "Look, I'm going to break you. Please just quit. Because I'm not going to. You're going to have to. And it's going to get really bad." And it's that idea of, "I don't want to do it, but I'm going to have to. Because you're trying me." And it's just sublime. Then there was the bit with Jimmy Uso when he stepped in and it felt like an appeal for calm. Like, you've almost felt like Roman coming back, and then he didn't.
Because Jimmy runs in and starts using their real names. He's like, "This is Josh, fool."
Yeah.
Like, "What are you doing?" Like, it's very personal and very real. He's like, "What are you doing?" And Roman starts just bawling and sobbing. He's like, "I don't even know who I am anymore." And he's just like tears, legit tears running down his face. And Jimmy extends his hand to Roman. He's like, "I got you. Whatever is going on, I don't know if it's Paul Heyman, I don't know if it's that title, whatever it is, we got you. Just come on back, Oos." And Roman grabs his hand, pulls him in, locks in the guillotine. And that's what makes Jay quit. Like, Jay will not quit because of the physical pain that's being brought to his own body, but he quits to protect his brother. And then this is what begins Jey Uso becoming the right-hand man of Roman Reigns and starts that whole trajectory and the stuff with Jimmy once he's healthy and comes back. And it's just, it, there's so, and then Afin Sika, after the match is over, standing at the top of the ramp, adorning Roman with the Chief's beads and standing there with him while the Usos are sitting in the ring staring like, this mother is just the best thing ever. It's, oh, the storytelling in that match are just peak Roman Reigns and what that character is now. And I legit go, like, I've got that whole monologue at the end memorized. Like, it's just, you still don't understand that I'm the man, that I'm the tribal chief. I'm going to end you because...
It's so good. People will complain about how Hell in a Cells aren't as iconic as they used to be because they're not as ultra violent as they used to be. You know, no one's flying off the top of the cells and getting bust open from ears to toes. But what you had in that match was a different level of violence. It was a raw, emotional one. And I feel like when done right, that kind of stuff gets much deeper into your brain than throwing somebody off a cell.
Oh, 100%.
When done right.
Just putting it at, like, all the violence at the end done to Jey Uso, where Roman is almost like, I really don't want to have to do this, but you're forcing my hand. And the emotion that's behind everything. And then the fact that a strap match broke out in the middle of this match. Like, it's an I Quit match inside Hell in a Cell, and a strap match breaks out. And the best, to me, the best quote of the match for Roman's like, you're gonna whip me? I do the whipping around here. And it's amazing.
And this is why I love doing this show, because you get wrestlers and wrestling fans and wonderful people who, we all have opinions on wrestling day to day, and it's easy when you do this job in particular to get sort of bogged down in too much of the detail. But what this all comes back to is you and I just talking about something great in wrestling and remembering like how much you love it when it's good and when it's great. Where did it start with you as a wrestling fan? When did you become a fan?
Very early age, when I was a child. And I would be sitting on my uncle's floor in like diapers or pull-ups or whatever it was at that time. And I was watching old NWA matches. You know, if you look, you see the right behind me is the NWA World Television Championship, the old one.
Ah, there it is. It's
right over my shoulder. And that's, you know, that was a time for me where wrestling was pure and real. And you saw like those rivalries and those emotions, you know. Your Four Horsemen going against the Road Warriors, Magnum TA, Dusty Rhodes, that kind of stuff was really what drew me in as a young man. And my love just continued to foster and grow. I just continued to foster it and grow it and add to it and just become a connoisseur of it, really. You know, you talk about having a love for it and seeing the passion that wrestling fans, like bringing wrestling fans on and seeing the passion that they have for it and how they love it. And I hope that through the stuff that I do on social media, through TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, that people see the love that I have for the business of professional wrestling, you know, loving the characters, loving the theme songs, loving the ambiance, everything that goes around it, and really just enjoying it. Because I think sometimes we lose that as fans. Some fans lose it anyway, where they just take it so seriously. I can't believe that this is what... Like the whole thing with day one and Roman, with Brock Lesnar being moved from the Roman Reigns match and ending and winning the WWE championship. Him winning that championship is now what has us with the match that we wanted for what seems like forever between Brock Lesnar and Bobby Lashley. You know, you have to understand that patience in professional wrestling as a fan is a true virtue. Because so many wrestling fans want that what they want, and they want it now, and they don't want to wait for, you know, what's going to develop from it, and they just instantly get upset and angry I can't believe. And then they finally get it. It's like, oh, well, they didn't have to do all that. They could have done. Now you're begrudgingly accepting what you wanted anyway. It's such childish behavior. Where it's like, this is what I wanted anyway, but I didn't get it the way that I wanted it. So now I'm upset. Just enjoy it, man. Enjoy what's in front of you right now. And don't be so angry and vile towards others because it doesn't automatically go your way. It's going to be fine.
I think we live in an era, and it's a bit of a cliche, but it's so true. We live in a time now where there is so much access to information, and everybody has a platform for opinion, that it's easy just to go, oh, everybody hated that. Well, no, they didn't. Just a couple of very noisy people didn't like it, but it just looks like everybody hated it. You know, the
right.
And I get that completely. And to go back to those early years, you in diapers watching the NWA, who was one of those stars that really jumped out to you? Can you remember the first wrestler that you gravitated towards?
First wrestler that I gravitated to was Nature Boy Ric Flair. Because of the flamboyance, because of the style and profile, because of the promo, because of the woo, because of the flair that he had in the ring. You know, there was just, you know, there's a swagger to certain guys, and he had it. You know, there was a swagger to Ric Flair. There's a swagger to Arn Anderson. And, you know, he's so underrated with what he's able to do on the mic, and a lot of people are seeing it now with the work that he's doing with Cody Rhodes and AEW. But, you know, old school fans remember, you know, he was probably better on the mic than Ric Flair was because of what he was able to do and the emotion that he was able to put out there. And guys like that, guys like Sting, of course, just jumped off of the screen at you. Dusty Rhodes, the Road Warriors, the Midnight Express, the Rock and Roll Express. You know, Ricky Morton was always one of those guys to me that kind of, you know, was far beyond what you saw on the screen. Like, he just, you know, the fire and just heart that they would exhibit with everything that they did. You know, you're Nikita Koloff, another guy that I just truly loved back then. It's just so many great wrestlers and what they were able to do with what they had, because back then, you know, the production quality wasn't as great as it is now. So it was incumbent on a lot of the performers, you know, if you're going to get over and get across to that audience, you really got to bring it. And there were those special few that did that. You know, your Fabulous Freebirds, your Von Erichs, they just had that it. And that jumped off of the screen at you. And those were a lot of the guys that, when I was younger, that I really just looked up to and was like, wow. Your Brian Pillmans, Stunning Steve Austin's, you know, Vader, just Ron Simmons. I could go on and on with some of these old WCW, NWA guys that I just really loved and would love watching. So it's just cool to be able to go back and be nostalgic with that kind of stuff, because it's what I came up on, and it's what gave me the love of wrestling that I have today.
Away from wrestling, what was life growing up for Mr. Harrison like?
You know, grew up in a single parent household with my mother, small town, Grambling, Louisiana. But, you know, it was the epicenter of a lot, because Grambling was the home of the premier historically Black college and university in the country, in Grambling State University. And during that time in the 80s and 90s, it was the place to be for, you know, HBCUs. And we had one of the greatest college coaches in history, Eddie Robinson, who had a, you know, tremendous career as a college football coach. And so people were always coming in for games. The town was always hopping. There were a ton of people that were at the school. And my mom worked on the campus. So I grew up basically on a college campus in the 80s and 90s. And it was an experience unlike anything you could ever have at that age. It was, you know, a very a crazy growth process for me growing up in the middle of all of that. And, you know, the culture and the atmosphere was just unlike anything that I had ever seen or been a part of before. And, you know, you go somewhere else and it's just not the same. And that was big for me to be a part of that and to grow up in that. And then as a young man, go to college there myself and experience it for myself in the classrooms, in the dorm rooms, in the student unions, you know, all over the place at the functions, just having myself a time. And it's kind of, but I still remember, even with all of that, you know, there was a Catholic church on the campus that we would go to and watch Monday Nitro and Monday Night Raw on Mondays. And we were flipping back and forth. You know, it was a bunch of us college students. We would go to like this little room that they had for like TV watching at the Catholic church. And we would all get together and watch Nitro and Raw and flip back and forth between, like, right there at the height of the Monday Night Wars, the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. And to experience that with so many other people, because it was just me for the longest time when I was younger, and then getting to college and other finding a group of people who were like, yeah, man, we watch it too. It's like, yes, let's all watch it together.
My people.
Yeah. I have found, you know, I've found my people. I have found my purpose to walk in here, and it's not to go to class and any of that crap. It's to watch wrestling with my friends. And we would just, and then that's when, you know, the whole passing tapes around thing, and, you know, getting videotapes of, you know, stuff in Japan and ROH and all that stuff back and forth really started and began with me. And that's where the real, like, studying and watching and falling in love with it came from. And that's, you know, watching the legal cable to watch ECW pay-per-views. So, you know, it's just getting the illegal box and trying to watch that stuff. It was just that, that's where it really started to just crank into high gear for me. And that's where the message board started for me. That's where the promo leagues started for me, was right there around that time, and doing that kind of stuff and just get really diving deep into the love of professional wrestling. So it's a time that, you know, it's something that I'll never forget.
What's the promo leagues?
Well, you know, there are things called e-feds. I don't know if you know this.
Of course. Yes.
Yes.
That's a lost art form, isn't it? The e-fed.
Yeah, e-fed.
So did you have a custom character on an e-fed, or were you an existing wrestler?
I did.
Who was the custom character? Come on.
The first character that I did in e-feds was a guy called the Innovator Chris Wells, because I was a big fan of the Innovator of Violence, Tommy Dreamer. So I was like, I'll just be the Innovator, because I don't want to steal from Tommy. So I'll just be the Innovator, Chris Wells. And I was on the message boards typing them up promos. And Chris Wells was actually, the pictures that I would use was a Booker T. So it was Booker T was the Innovator, Chris Wells. And I would type my promos on the message board and talk about what I was going to do. And it was very like Ric Flair-ish within, you know, the stuff that I would say. But, you know, it caught on really quickly with some of the guys on the message board. I was winning championships all the time because of, you know, because I love to cut a promo, Tom. I don't know if you know this.
I may have noticed TikTok that you are one for a champion. Promo, sir.
Yeah. Yeah, because we had, there's an eFed on TikTok now. It's NGTTWF. And I was the former TikTok World Heavyweight Champion for a little while. And that was a lot of fun, because I used to cut promos on TikTok, like 1 minute promos on TikTok. And it was just, that was before you got on, I think. And it was just, I still do it from time to time, not on there, but in other places like on Facebook that I don't tell people about. But I still love it. It's just, you know, I love, you know, cutting promos and, you know, talking about what I'm going to do and saying, you know, that, you know, this is how, because, you know, I get real like into it. So it's a lot of fun. And that's where a lot of that started, was back during, while I was living in Grandma.
So that was the that was where the love for the Roman Reigns Jey Uso match really comes from, because as great as that match is, it's kind of a promo built into it as well. So yeah. It leans They're into that sort of E-Fed type situation. Yeah.
He's basically just cutting a promo the whole time, which is just a lot of fun. Nice. And, the whole time he's just talking to Jey, and he's just talking to him, I'm going to put you down. You better acknowledge me. Just acknowledge me. Just end me. Just come on.
And that's why you love it.
You okay?
It's back. Sorry. I had a thing pop up on there, and I was trying to very subtly get rid of it. And I didn't want to interrupt you. There we go. Okay. Done that now. It's fine. It's fine now. You talk about creating the innovator Chris Wells. You talk about entering wrestling promo challenges on TikTok, becoming the TikTok champion. Mm. Was there ever a point during college, during your formative years, that you made a thought? You thought maybe I should get into wrestling. Was there ever a thought to become a wrestler yourself? Basically,
yes. Oh, absolutely. I work with and we'll be back up and running because independent wrestling in Louisiana had kind of stalled for a while because of the state commission. I work with an independent wrestling promotion here, Bayou Independent Wrestling. If you look online for a couple of different matches, you'll see me managing on the side. I'm not wrestling, but I'm managing. I took a couple bumps from time to time, but I'm managing. But I've worked with Skandar Akbar and Sanjay Dutt and Wardell Walker and Cassidy Riley and a couple of guys who have worked with WWE, NWA, that kind of stuff. And Barrett Brown, who's with NJPW Strong now, with Stray Dog Army. He and I have done a couple things together, which is really cool. Absolutely. But the one time, I don't know have I ever told you about the one time I actually tried to train?
I think you may have done when we had our initial chat about a year ago for the news podcast, but I think there'll be people that may have missed it, so I would love you to tell it again if you don't mind.
So we were in Marshall, Texas, and I was doing ring announcing for this show, and they were doing some training before the show started, and they were like, you want to get in and do a couple things? I was like, yeah, absolutely, because I was like, if this works out well and I do pretty well, maybe I could actually, get in a match or two. So I get in and start running the ropes, and everything's going fine until at one point I take a clothesline wrong and just twist the heck out of my ankle and end up having to go to the ER, and I'm on crutches for like a week or two because it's just swollen. Like taking a clothesline. How do you twist your ankle taking a clothesline?
That's impressive.
How does that work? how does that work? So that was the sign to me from the heavens to say, hey, ring announcing, managing, that's your thing. Not, don't do this. Don't, you have a future. You have a life that you wanted to know. But they've toyed around with the idea of me participating in matches here in the next little bit, just as a kind of a special attraction thing, where it's like this wrestler and this guy, TikTok zone against these guys, and just get me in for like one or two matches. So you may see the professor in a wrestling ring in 2022.
Oh, that's exciting. But I feel like the managing role is so in your wheelhouse. Due to a lack of information about what you do there, I don't know how you play it, because I do a little bit of managing for a promotion here in the northeast of England, and I really, really like being a bad guy.
Oh, that's how I started.
The most fun.
Yeah, like how I started doing it was I was a plant at first, and this heel runs up on me and pushes me through like three. I was in the front row, and he pushes me through like three rows of chairs. And the funniest part was going back to the restroom after I get finished with that, and there's a kid standing next to me while I'm in the restroom. He's like, that's why you don't talk to the wrestlers like that. And he had no idea that it was all a plan.
But you play along, right? You have to.
Right. I was like, yeah, maybe next time I won't do that. And So we get down the line and they make me a special guest referee for a match between that guy and a good guy. And it's a Falls County where no disqualification match, and end up turning on the good guy and siding with the bad guy. We form this heel stable. Funny enough, ready, wait for it, called the Inner Circle. And dun, this dun, was dun. Back in the early, like late 2000s, like around 2008, 2009, where, yeah. So I managed the Inner Circle before it was in AEW. So that's pretty funny. Either you're in or you're out. And that was our whole tagline. It was just really cool to do. And I was a bad guy for the longest time. And then they did a shutdown on the company because they needed to retool a couple of things, kind of like what ROH is doing now. But they brought it back up a couple of years ago. And when they did, the head booker, he's like, hey, you know, well, we're going to bring you back because everything is going on with you. Because at the time I was working in my church and, you know, I had become a school teacher at that point. Back when I first started doing it, I was a college professor, which is where the Professor Nick Harrison nickname came from. And he was like, we want you to be the commissioner now, which is my current role with them. We want you to be the commissioner, but we want you to be a good guy. And I was like, cool, that works, you know, because I was a family man, working in my church, all of this stuff. So I did the face turn, and that's where we are now. But, you know, man, like the heel role is just so fun to play. Like you're just talking to the kids and shut up. You don't talk to me like that. You better cheer this man. He's, you know, just so much fun to do. And especially when you do it well and they truly hate you, that is without magnifique, Tom. Just the best.
I remember
love doing the...
Oh, sorry, I interrupted
please.
You there.
No, please, go ahead.
we're too polite. And this is the kind of point I was going to make. When I got approached to be a heel manager, I remember my good lady saying, I don't think it's going to work because you're too nice. I was like, okay, well, thanks for the support. It's appreciated. And then she ended up watching one of the bits that I did, and she went, actually, I'm wrong. I really hate you doing that. Like, yeah. Brilliant. She said, I actually hate you. Great, that's all we want. And if and
that's
if,
what, that's
if you
point.
Have to love me, and you're saying that, that's brilliant.
It's always the best, man. When people who really like some of my best friends would come to shows, and they'd be like, "Man, I really can't. Don't talk to me. Like, don't stand next to me right now. You are just the worst. Why did you have to talk to that kid like that? Like that kid was standing too close to me." Like, what do you want? He's breathing on me while I'm trying to manage this match. I don't need any distractions like that. Little rugrats breathing on me, giving me their colds, giving me kid germs. Yuck. Stand over there. Stop talking to me. It's just a tremendous.
The best
just
fun.
Tremendous.
The best fun.
Yeah.
Let's get to your second match then, Professor. Well, we've had Jey Uso, Roman Reigns, and a very emotionally charged I Quit Hell in a Cell between those two from last year. What would you like your second match to be, sir?
Second match would be WrestleMania 21, Kurt Angle versus Shawn Michaels, which was, you know, first of all, the background to that match, the lead up to it gave us so many fantastic moments. Top of which for me would be Sexy Kurt.
Make your angle hurt.
Which is just, you know, I think I'm cute. I got gold medals. I got the moves that make them all tap. Got the angle slam, the ankle lock, Marty Jannetty. Still can't walk. I'm just a sexy Kurt.
Sexy Kurt.
I make your ankle hurt.
Ankle hurt.
Oh, just the best, man. Like, just such a fun moment. Sensational Sherry, rest in peace. Just the best kind of stuff. And then the match finally took place. And what a, you know, this one was your 5-star, like, Matt classic match between these two guys. Just two, you know, first of all, you got JR and King calling the match. So right off the bat, You know you're going to get just orally pleased with, you know, what you hear in the match. And the animosity between these two, it was palpable. This was back during a time where, you know, they still had the brand split between Raw and SmackDown, but they would have interpromotional matches at WrestleMania. Because if you remember, that was the WrestleMania that had the match between Randy Orton and The Undertaker, which was an interpromotional match and one of The Undertaker's better matches at WrestleMania. And this, first of all, WrestleMania 21, which is great all the way around to me. You know, you have the first ever Money in the Bank ladder match. You have Rey Mysterio versus Eddie Guerrero. You have The Undertaker versus Randy Orton. You have JBL versus John Cena in his first WWE Championship win. This was the crowning of Batista and John Cena as kind of like the faces of the company at that time. So this match in the middle of all of that was probably the best match out of all of them. Because the back and forth between these two, the way that they just put it all on the line in this match, how they were able to both get, you know, their stuff in and still, you know, look strong, and, you know, the will to compete and survive in this match between both of them, how the fans, even though Angle was, you know, very much hated at this time, you know, big time heel. And the fans were going back and forth in this, you know, let's go Angle, let's go Michaels, back and forth between the two of them. What Shawn was able to do, just what Angle was able, just so many different things. Like, first off, the Kurt Angle moonsault into nothing is just one of my favorite moves in all of wrestling. Like, he may have hit that moonsault like two or three times, and one of the times he hit it, he broke Bob Holly's arm. So
the batting average was pretty bad for that moonsault, even though it looked beautiful.
No wonder people were always rolling out of the way from that, because they didn't want any appendages broken. But the way that he was able to make that just look so pretty was always so cool. The springboard moonsault that Michaels hit, you know, on Angle to the table was just poetry. The sprawl at the beginning of the match, just the way that they, again, storytelling. Like, the first match that we talked about was storytelling, but the majority of it was like basically cutting promos in the middle of the match. In this one, they told a story with the move, with the way they were able to do things. The beginning of the match, how it starts with Michael slapping Angle in the face, and then Angle just taking him down and sprawling with him and trying to overpower him with wrestling. And then Michaels with a headlock. Like, that headlock sequence with Angle went on for like a couple of minutes during the beginning of that match. But it just told a story of, okay, you want to do that, then this is what we're going to do. And then they start brawling and just going back and forth. And the, you know, JR talks about it at the beginning of the match, the catch-as-catch style. Catch-as-catch-can style of Shawn Michaels against the technical prowess of Kurt Angle. All of this really came to the forefront, and they were really doing each other's stuff throughout the entire match. And, you know, the way that the match ended with Shawn basically saying, you're going to have to dang near break my ankle for me to tap out, and then Angle basically dang near breaking his ankle to make Shawn tap out, was just, is just beautiful, man. And that's, you know, the first match we talked about, the Roman Reigns, Jey Uso, that's one of my favorite matches to watch. I don't think it's one of the best matches that I've ever seen, but it's one of my favorite matches to watch. This one is not only one of my favorite matches to watch, I think it's one of the best. It's the best wrestling match, one-on-one wrestling match I've ever watched. It's the best I've ever seen.
And this is somebody who has watched like NWA, early years WWF, early years WCW. You've seen it all. And you're saying, and this match from 05,
this right here
is one of the best.
This match for me is quite possibly the best match that I've ever watched. And yes, I have watched a ton of wrestling, but just the story that they tell during this match and what they're able to do, you know, hit pretty much hitting every spot, just on the nose. It just really speaks to me, and that's one of those matches where I can go back and watch it and still just be into it the whole time, where I'm just yelling out like, Angle Slam! Oh my God, it's over. It's over. No, it's not. Oh, wow. It's just so... There's those kind of matches where no matter how many times you watch it and how many times you go back to it, you can still be emotionally invested into what you're watching, those are the matches that you love to see. And this is one of those matches.
It gives us one of those great moments. And it's one of my favorite moves of Kurt Angle. And it's really, I think it's quite underrated for what it is. It is actually the most devastating finisher in WWE history. You know, so suck on that, end of days. This is the true most deadly finisher ever, because it's one thing to have the ankle lock. It's at the end of this match where he's got the ankle lock on and then he grapevines it. And right. It's that little thing that Angle does when times are really desperate. The moment he grapevines that ankle lock, nobody ever survives it. There's always...
Because you're not going anywhere.
You're not going anywhere. The only time that it didn't win a match was 03, the SmackDown Iron Man match between Angle and Lesnar. Angle, in the dying seconds of that match, puts the grapevined ankle lock on Lesnar, and the time expires before Lesnar taps out. And it was great, because knowing how powerful it was when he grapevines it, everybody went, oh, this is it. Angle's going to win it. And literally time was the enemy there. And it was great to see that pulled out again, because it's simple but effective, and it's always devastating. And Shawn and Angle were just beautiful together. Where did you watch that match, out of interest?
I was at home. We ordered that one. I remember specifically because WrestleMania 20 I had on DVD, and I used to watch, and that was, you know, the triple threat match at the end for the title, and what was it? Evolution versus Rock and Foley. That was 20. The 21 was WrestleMania Goes Hollywood, and I really wanted to order that one and watch it live. Because it just looked like a great card from top to bottom. So I'm at home watching this, just going absolutely berserk, watching these matches, because it started with Eddie and Ray, and that they were tag team champions at the time. And that was just a great back and forth match, just basically rivalry between, you know, just, you know, who's better. Let's see who can come out on top in this one. So it was a great WrestleMania from top to bottom. And it's probably my favorite WrestleMania to watch because of the matches, because of it. And that WrestleMania gave us all of the trailers with the wrestlers, you know, doing all these different movies and stuff like that, with Kurt Angle doing When Harry Met Sally. Yes, yes, yes. Just tap, tap. Tap, just so good. And John Cena and JBL doing A Few Good Men. Just so many great moments from that WrestleMania itself. And again, this was the highlight for me. But just, you know, I love that WrestleMania. I can go back and watch that whole thing from top to bottom now and still just be as enthralled into it as I was when I first watched it.
Was Nick Harrison Professor Harrison when you watched that?
No, I was still College Harrison.
Was the plan at this point to go into teaching, or was there something else on your mind?
The plan was acting. At this time, I wanted to become an actor. That's what I was in school for at the time, was acting. I did 6 years of theater, 4 at Grambling State and 2 at Louisiana Tech, getting my master's degree. As a matter of fact, when that WrestleMania came around, I was getting ready to go to Ohio and do a show called Blue Jacket, the epic outdoor drama. I was riding horses and wearing loincloths, and there may be pictures of this lying around somewhere. I was in much better shape back then than I am now. I was about 50 pounds lighter, and just some spindly kid in his early 20s, one to live the dream of being an actor. And that's what the plan was at the time. Ended up coming back home because I had issues with when my mother was sick, and I came back home to take care of her. And that's where the teaching came into play, because I was waiting tables at a Chili's, and somebody from the theater department at Grambling State was there, and they were like, what are you doing waiting tables? You should be doing this, that, other. I was like, when I told them the whole story of why I was back home, and they were like, okay, just come by and see us. There's a new head of the department. He's looking for somebody to bring in. And that's how I ended up becoming a college instructor at my alma mater, teaching theater and speech. Funny enough, I'm teaching speech classes for years. So that's where that really came into play, was doing that.
So had things in the real world gone a different way, what was the hope to go into acting to do? Like, was it to be TV? Was it to do film? Was it to do theater? What was the plan?
All of the things, Tom. I love Lady Theater. Love theater. Theater was one of my, theater is where I cut my teeth in acting, and being able to do probably one of my favorite gigs as an actor. Wasn't even a gig. I was in grad school, and I played John Falstaff in Henry IV, Part One. And it was just, that meant the world to me, because Falstaff is one of the greatest characters that Shakespeare ever wrote. It's one of the only characters that Shakespeare wrote that appeared in more than one show. And he was just brash and brazen, big guy. I never forget, I actually had a gigantic afro at the time. And the director of the show was like, do you mind if we cut your hair? Like, no, I don't mind at all. But he didn't want to cut all of it off. He just wanted to cut a big bald spot in the middle of it, like Fred Sanford.
Oh.
And he wanted to cut it himself.
Oh,
so
gosh.
He got the razor and the shaver, and he's dancing around like the guy in Reservoir Dogs while he's cutting my hair and just taking it off piece by piece and laughing
and I don't
as he's
know
cutting
I
the
came
middle
in
of my
tonight.
Hair. Oh, I came here tonight. He's just dancing around. I got the feeling it's all today, right? Zoop. And he's just having a blast.
God, he was
just
having a good
a
time.
Big bald spot in the middle of my head. Yeah. And I was the one who had to live with it for months. So I'm walking around campus with a hat on my head and a big Bozo the Clown tuft of hair underneath the hat when I'm going out in the public, because I don't want people to see that I got this big bald spot in the middle of my head. This is just crazy. But, that's acting, man. Especially acting in college, there's a lot of stuff that you do to kind of get ready for roles. And, you grow your hair out, you cut it off, you lose weight, you gain weight, you wear big suits that make you look like you're 400 pounds, and you're sweating profusely for hours underneath the hot theater lights. But that's what you do, Tom. And so the dream was to do, acting, whether it was TV, whether it was film, whether it was stage, it was just to act and do stuff. And there are some people that I was doing that stuff with back then that ended up having fantastic careers on stage, film, and TV. I don't know, what is it, Star Trek? Is it Voyage? The new one that's on Paramount Plus, the new Star Trek, the Captain.
Okay. She was in your class.
She wasn't in my class because she went to Alabama, but the show that I did in Ohio, she did the same show. We worked together for a whole summer, and she's Sonequa Martin Green. She's just a fantastic woman. And it's always cool to see the people that came from the same places that I came from that are doing well now. You got some folk who are working with Disney and doing stuff with them, both animated and the stuff on Disney Plus. I had a friend of mine who I went to school with in Louisiana Tech that's working on the story of Boba Fett, the book of Boba Fett, excuse me.
Wow.
So yeah, and she's doing stuff with them. And it's just really cool to see some of those folks that I came up with doing their thing. And they're looking at me now. Some of them are looking at me like, oh, wow, look at all the stuff you're doing on TikTok. You're freaking famous. Like, no, I'm just I'm just one man. Yeah.
Stop it.
But no, it's so it's just it, that's I think that's a lot of the stuff that I learned back then. I'm getting a chance to use now with what I'm doing on social media, with the TikTok stuff and all of that, putting the acting training to good use with all of that stuff. And I'm glad to see that it's come to fruition the way that it was. It's not necessarily what I dreamed of when I was in college and, you know, spending those nights, you know, at work calls and doing all these shows and stuff like that. But to see that I've been able to kind of niche my own path with it has been just really fulfilling for me. And I'm very happy with how it all turned out.
How did you gravitate into the, obviously you told the story about how you got into theatre, but how did you find acclimatizing going from sort of wanting to forge your own career in acting to forging other people's?
Well, you know, the whole acting thing, I had kind of taken a back seat because, you know, while I was teaching that, theater, I was kind of still looking at different roles and stuff like that. I did some extra work and that kind of thing going back and forth. So because there were a lot of movies that were being filmed in the state of Louisiana, especially in my part of the state, in the top part after Hurricane Katrina had come through, because a lot of films were supposed to be done in New Orleans. They ended up coming to North Louisiana because they weren't able to do it in New Orleans or in South Louisiana because of all the damage. And so I was still doing stuff like that. But then when that stopped and I ended up going into education, in elementary education, I kind of just let it all go. And I wasn't even doing stuff on social media, like talking about it. You know, all of the boom from social media started right after everybody went on lockdown here in the States. And I started working with a company that was providing enrichment programs for children of people who were working on the front line. And one of my coworkers was like, you know, you need to get on TikTok. And I was, no, I'm not gonna do that. And I ended up getting on, and I was having a whole lot of fun, but I was still using what I had learned to my benefit for it. Making the videos and stuff and the lip syncing and the acting that goes along with it, because that's what I was doing before I was even doing any of the wrestling stuff. I was just doing funny videos, and, you know, people really gravitated toward it and liked it. And then the wrestling stuff started to hit, and that really just became a thing. And so being able to use what I knew and had learned towards this was very beneficial into how it has become successful. But at the end of the day, it's still a whole lot of fun for me. Just like theater was, man. Theater was just a lot of fun for me. Hanging out with my friends and acting and doing these shows and just enjoying myself was really what it was about and what it's still about now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Let's talk about the TikTok stuff. So you've been convinced to get onto the app, and you start doing what you're doing. And when did you notice that the stuff that you were doing was catching on?
The follower count was just growing exponentially and really quickly. It seemed like every other day I was hitting a new milestone. You know, you would see some people and they would have this amount of followers and that amount of followers. And I was, you know, just modest in the stuff that I was doing, you know, because, you know, you can't go live on TikTok until you have 1,000 followers. So that was my thing. I was like, why can't I go live like all these other people are going live? And they're like, well, you don't have enough followers yet. So, okay. So it started going up by hundreds. It was like 100, 200, 300, 400, 500. It was getting likes. And the videos at the time were averaging at 1,000 views a video, which for somebody just now starting out on TikTok is pretty good. Because, you know, you got some people, if you get there are some folks who are in there, if you get 100 views on a video, it's a win. And I was getting like 1,000 views a video when I first started. And it just started to grow and continue to grow and grow and grow. And then when like verified accounts and like big creators started, you know, duetting my videos and following me and sending me messages and saying, hey, you know, I love what you're doing. That was always crazy to me. And it still blows my mind every time it happens. Like just recently, you probably saw the video, Ken Shamrock started following me on TikTok. And I was like, the world's most dangerous man. And you know, when you get video, you get messages and you see these follows like AJ Francis, the former Top Dollar from WWE, who has begun to grow his account on TikTok, and he started following me, and we're talking back and forth, getting messages from him, from Leo Rush, from all these different guys who are watching and seeing what I'm doing, like, hey man, keep up the good work. We love what you're doing. That stuff still blows my mind. Where it's like, that's when that to me is the sign of, you know, yeah, you're doing pretty good when you get these messages from these big accounts and these big time people on social media who are watching your stuff and are really enjoying your stuff. Like when the whole Corn ABC video blew up and Jonathan Davis shared it to his Instagram story. That was, to me, one of the first big moments where it was like, wow, this is something that's actually happening, and that's crazy. And the followers started to blow up and just keep growing and growing and growing. And I still get kind of a kick out of seeing my notification and seeing the 99 plus at the bottom when I'm looking at TikTok and seeing that's I'm like, yeah, that's pretty cool. So it's just that stuff I still get a kick out of that kind of stuff. It's still surreal to me that this kind of stuff is happening, you know. And you know, being a teacher and educator, well, now in administration, where the kids are coming to school and they're like, you're the TikTok guy. When are you going to put me in a video? And that's when I know. Because this is their stuff, man. Like, they're the ones who care about the blue check mark. They're the one who cares about the follower count and all of that stuff. And they're like, how did you do this? Oh, my gosh. And that's when I'm like, yeah, this is pretty cool.
It's the big, you, among other videos that you've done for TikTok, I think loads of people, and you know, the reason why we're talking on this particular platform is the wrestling entrances. They're these just pitch perfect, absolutely nailed entrances from Ross, from WWE stars and other AEW stars from across history. And as you say, you have had lots of wonderful interaction. Dave Batista loved what you did. That was exciting, yes, to see, and among others. And this all led to, among other things, you appearing on WWE show The Bump. So how did that conversation start with you getting on The Bump?
Well, I was in the middle of standardized testing here in the States. And we were in the middle of a test, and the test had ended. And this is when the TikTok had really started to grow, and I had over, I believe I was over 100,000 or so followers at the time. I can't even remember the exact follower count, but it was pretty good. And the kids are like, can we make a TikTok? And I said, sure. So one of the kids had an idea to do a TikTok of me entering the classroom as the Undertaker. And I said, sure. So I had somebody go to the back of the classroom and work the lights. So they turn the lights out with the gong. And then I walk in. And when I raise my arms up, they turn the lights back on. And WWE saw it and started following me and sent me a message. And I was, so that's what was crazy to me, where I get this message in my inboxes from WWE. I was like, WWE, you have to follow somebody back in order to get a message from, so they're WWE's following me? Okay. And they sent me a message. They was like, yeah, we love your content. Would you like to come on our morning show, The Bump? And I said, yeah. What actually happened, to be candid, what actually happened was I see the message, and before I respond, I ask the person that's working in the classroom with me to watch the kids so I can walk out for a second. And I walk and I go into this breezeway that's right around the corner, and I immediately just start sobbing, like loudly crying, because this is, you know, we talk about, and you asked me earlier, you know, was there ever a time where you just, you know, wanted to be a professional wrestler, where you wanted to be in the business? And, you know, I was working with the independent promotion at the time, but everything had stalled because we were in the middle of a pandemic. So I was like, so this was to me, you know, the height of validation of what I'm doing. You know, they see what I'm doing. I felt seen in that moment more than I'd ever been, more than I ever felt seen before, because they were just, you know, they wanted me to be on it. They really wanted me to be on, because I told them, you know, we're in the middle of testing, so I can't do it right now. They're like, okay, just we'll find a date that we want you to come on. And they kept, you know, up with me, and they kept asking. And I would tell them, you know, this is when I can do it, because I ended up doing, if you remember watching The Bump, I was in a hotel room. Mm-hmm. I was at a teaching conference in New Orleans at the time, because but I had to fit this in my schedule somehow. So it's like, we'll just do it here while I'm on. And I missed a couple of sessions to do this, but they totally understood, because it's freaking WWE. So getting the chance to talk to those guys was just the height of all of the stuff that I've done so far, you know, because I had been on The Bump. And I'd talked to you on Cult, and we had done the news thing, the deal on Cultaholic, and we did the watch along within your house as well. And like stuff like that has really just been, you know, the coolest thing ever to me, you know, to get recognition from, like somebody, a friend of mine tweeted the other day about how Eric Bischoff had been on WWE and AEW programming in the same year. And I was like, yeah, I kind of feel the same way, because I'd been on WWE programming and AEW had just been sharing my stuff, like duets with my stuff all over social media on, and Bleacher Report had been sharing my stuff too. And it was like, just, wow. Like, this is crazy. This is insane. You know, 2021 was just a crazy year for me, and I and this is a great way to start it. Start 2022 is on Graps, because Graps was something that I had wanted to do for the longest time, and people have been asking for months now. They're like, "When are you going to be on Desert Island Graps?" It's like, "We, it's coming. I promise, it's coming." I love Tom. Whenever Tom calls, I'm going to pick up the phone. So yes. This is going to happen.
And so it was full disclosure, something that we talked about last year, and for whatever reason, we only just got the. I think something happened. My brain wandered off, and then I went, right, you, we've got an edit date down. This is going to happen now. This is going to be us. And it's nice, because it's like, because I did mine the other week, and I think everybody kind of thought, oh, is that the end then? Because I'd always said, I'll do mine last or something. But then I had to kind of go, no. It was a Christmas bit of thing that we did. It's carrying on. Now I can go. You're on, so it's fine. We can move on.
Don't you ever leave. You can never.
But
no. Never do it.
If James Corden decides to leave your country, I'm happy to swap with him.
Please, yes, come on. Come on over.
I've asked Alex,
front row.
I've asked the good lady about it, and she says she'll happily come and live in LA if she can just sit on a yacht and drink cocktails while I'm at rehearsals. I said, yeah, that's fine. We can do that. So if Cord never changes his mind about being there, I'm over.
I'm absolutely your Reggie Watts, dude.
Yes!
I'm here.
Yes!
I'm ready.
We've got a Reggie.
Bring it in.
Got a Reggie. That's what we need. But no, it's I love hearing how much all this means to you, because like we're very kindred spirits in that way. Because for so many people that you see doing wrestling-based stuff online, there is sometimes you look at them. I'm not going to name names because it's not fair. You look and you see there's no light in the eyes. You know, there's no joy in the heart anymore for it. And I kind of turned up in 2019 to do this job with just like wide eyes, because like this is, you know, in the same way that you got emotional talking about when you got, you know, asked to go on the bump, like it was similar for me coming here, looking around my spare room. But but you know what I mean, figuratively, yeah. Here, not this is just my spare room. Is there a cat behind me? No, he's not there. But sometimes he sleeps there when I'm recording these. But I felt the same, because like it's wrestling has been outside of doing radio, like it's been the thing that's walked beside me my whole life. So to get to do it, like why wouldn't you be excited by it? Like why wouldn't the passion be there? It's the coolest thing in the world to get to be a part of it. And I remember
this is what I started doing it.
That's why I fell in love watching what you do on TikTok, and I was like, "This, you just seem like the coolest guy in the world. We need to. I want to reach out and make sure that you know." Because that's another thing that I think that we need to do more of in 2022. And you're brilliant for this. And I see the way you interact with people, and it's so. That sounds really cold when I say interact with people. You talk to people, because we are all as a people so quick to talk up when we have a bad experience, and we're less so inclined to talk up when we have a good one. And I'd love to see more of the latter in 2022. More people just going, I enjoyed that, I appreciate you, and that sort of stuff. And you're very much a beacon of that. Whenever
that's,
I see you,
that's what I do, Mary, because I want people to know that this. This was never a part of the plan, Tom. No. Like all of this stuff, all of this media, all the attention, it was never a part of the plan. I got on TikTok to entertain people during a pandemic because there are a lot of people who were just going through really dark times. And to get some of the messages that I was getting at the time from people who were like, I'm going through a difficult time at home. I've got PTSD. I'm dealing with this chronic ailment. And your videos make me smile. They bring, a light to my day. And I truly appreciate you for that. You know, that's what it's about. It's about giving people an opportunity to connect, and engage with you. Because for me, it's not just, just a blanket statement of saying, I appreciate you. Just to throw something out there, I truly appreciate every single person who follows, every single person who retweets, who reposts, who likes, who subscribes, who I love every single one of them, because that's not something that they had to do. That's not something that is required of them, but they choose to do it because they love what I do and it makes them happy. And they make me happy through their happiness, if people didn't enjoy it, I wouldn't do it. If it was just me, there are some people who are on social media to try to get famous. There are some people who are on social media who want the attention, who want the fame, who want the spotlight, who want the blue check mark. I didn't get on there for that. I got on social media because, there were people, I didn't get on TikTok for that. I got on TikTok because I wanted to be able to entertain people, because that's something that I've always felt, drawn to doing. It's, you know, that's me walking in my purpose. And if I can kind of connect with them through that and let them know that there's somebody out there who loves them, who appreciates them, who thinks the world of them, then that is something that I'm going to continue to do, because there are way too many people in this world right now who don't hear that on a regular basis, who aren't told that they are loved, who aren't told that they are appreciated, who aren't told that they mean something to someone else. And that's a large portion of why I do what I do, is to be able to connect with people who love wrestling, who love music, who love comedy, who love God. That's who I am, and that's what I always do, and that's what I'm going to continue.
On your Twitter bio, above all other things, Bills fan, WWE fan, star of the bump, TikTok star, above all other things, is child of God. How has religion kept you focused and driven during the last awful 2 years?
That is number one. That is the forefront. You know, that's how I was raised. That's who I am. That's how I raised my child, is to always put God first in everything. And that's what I do. I'm not here to minister to you that are watching. I'm not here to minister to Tom Campbell.
I know.
And I'm glad that you did, because that's not something that I'm ashamed of, but I don't want people thinking I'm here to convert you and, you know, da da da. No. This is just me speaking my heart. And that is how I live my life, is by putting God first in all things and knowing that everything happens for a reason. You know, God puts you in these positions for a reason. I truly believe that, you know, when I say walking in my purpose, that, you know, that is part of what I'm saying, is that, you know, God has ordered my steps to do these things on social media so that I can connect with other people and give them this this connection. And so I can get the connection as well. And for me to be able to pour into the lives of others, because, you know, I work in my church. Tomorrow night I'll be teaching a Bible study to 4th and 5th grade young men, because that, you know, that's what I do on my Wednesday nights. And on Sundays I go to church and I read my devotional and I pray every day. And it's, you know, that's part of my life and that's part of who I am. And that's what has helped to bring me through these past couple of years, is knowing that, you know, I'm covered, I'm protected, and that there is a supreme being that is always going to have my back and always going to protect me. So, and that's why, you know, and even in some of the videos that I post on social media, you know, I talk about my religion openly. I've never been ashamed to let people know that I am a Christian, that I am a child of God, and that is, you know, something that I learned back when I was doing theater in college. One of my favorite college professors, he would always say three things that you always put tantamount: your God, your family, and your work. That's what you do. So, and that Twitter bio is that kind of outlines that, because the first thing I have is child of God. The second thing I have is father. And then after that is all the other stuff
and
that I
do. And then the work.
So, yeah. So it's your God, your family, your work, it's in all things. Always 1, 2, 3.
You are a man of not only do you love wrestling promos, but you give wrestling promos. And this is kind of a weird sort of religion, Bible, promo based question that I'm going to shoehorn in here. Is there a particular passage, line from the Bible that you hold on to during tough times, or one that you lean towards on a regular basis?
I can't remember the exact book or chapter or what number verse it is, but one sends 1,000 a flight, 2 sends 10,000 a flight, meaning that when you're on your own, then you still have power through God. But when more than one person come together in prayer, or, you know, just to come together to talk about the great things that God has bestowed upon them, then so many great things can happen. And that's kind of what this whole social media thing has become, because it's not just me. It's all these other people who are coming together to talk about these things, to bring positivity and light to such a dark, dark place that is social media. You know, through my job working with kids, especially now working with junior high kids in the position that I am, that I'm in, so many of them just are on social media and doing so many just crazy things through social media, especially in places like Snapchat, Instagram. It's all just, you know, he's talking about this and she's talking about that, and then they end up fighting and all this stuff. And that's, you know, social media can be a very dark place. So I try to spread love and positivity through what I do. And then hopefully the love and positivity that I spread and show touches somebody else. And that person shows love and positivity that touches 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different people, and they show love and positivity. You know, just like darkness can spread, light can spread as well. So when you are able to, with other people, spread positivity throughout this, whatever it is you do, then you're really working towards real change and making a difference. And that's what I try to do in all things. And that's one that just really sticks out to me is, you know, 1 sends 1,000 to flight, 2 sends 10,000 to flight. So when you can get more than one person together to spread love, positivity, and light, then you're really doing the world some good.
I appreciate you sharing that. Thank you very much.
No problem, my friend.
Many people. We've got one more match to get to for your desert island. But before we get there, you also are allowed to take with you, I like to spring this on people, it's nothing bad, I promise. You're also allowed to take with you a movie, an album, and a luxury item. So if I was to say to you, it's nice to ask this without a bit of a preamble on it, because it's interesting to see what the first ones are that spring off your head. So when I say to you, you can take a movie with you, what movie would you take?
Friday.
Straight in there, Friday. Why Friday?
Oh, Friday was a coming of age film for me. I remember being in, this is funny, when I was in high school, I was in Future Teachers of America. So it was something that I looked at when I was younger. And when we were doing a summer camp kind of thing in New Orleans, and the counselors, because I was a sophomore in high school at the time, the counselors took it to see the movie Friday because it had just come out in theaters. And it was unlike anything that I'd ever seen before. And it just blew my mind. And it's still to this day, probably my favorite movie of all time. I can quote it just about word for word, bar for bar, just an amazing, amazing film. And for a young African-American male coming up during that time, it, you know, it really spoke to me. And so that would be the movie, because I could watch that movie a million times over and just laugh uncontrollably, you know. And so I just, yeah, Friday would be the movie.
Nice. What about an album? What album would you take?
I would take The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill.
Beautiful.
About as close to a perfect film that you can ever really, not film, album, about as close to a perfect album as you could ever really get. Just pitched perfect, every single song just nails it. Just nails it. And again, that was around the same time for me as a young man in high school. I think that was a couple of years after Friday. I was getting close to the end of, I think Miseducation was like late 90s. It was another coming of age album for me, because I loved Lauryn Hill from when she was in the Fugees anyway. And then she came out with her solo album, Miseducation, and it was from the beginning of the album to the end, just an absolute masterpiece of an album. So that would be the one that I take with me, because you can run that one back and forth and never miss a beat. Either that one or 24K from Bruno Mars, which again is another album that from beginning to end just nails it. Mm. Absolutely nails it. So yeah.
I like it. How about a luxury item then?
Now, luxury item. When you say luxury item, can you give me an example?
So it can be an item that has some personal meaning to you. It can be a bit of technology to keep you entertained on the island. It can have sentimental value. For example, items in the past have included PlayStations, Xboxes. We had James Storm bringing toilet paper with him. We had somebody bringing a body pillow with them. We have people bringing artwork with them.
Gotcha.
Some people are bringing pets. I know that Sienna wants to, Alison Kay wants to bring her cats. So that's fine. So you don't have to be a pet. Don't feel like if you have pets that if you take them, you're a bad pet owner. It's fine. Stop looking at me like that, Pablo. I might take you. I've not decided. I'm getting evil. He's gone now.
So
what would your luxury item be?
My luxury item would probably be my Zubaz.
Nice.
My Buffalo Bills Zubaz. So no matter where I am, I'm still a part of the mafia. Amazing. So I would take my Zubaz with me. And plus, they're comfortable. Just walking around with them, they're very comfortable. They're airy, so they're good in cold weather or warm. So it really just goes with the flow. And the island vibe, really, would be the Zubaz. So, yeah.
I'm sad that the Zubaz thing, it disappeared over here. We had... there was obviously MC Hammer in the 90s brought them kicking and screaming into the culture. But over here, they just vanished. But I know you still see a lot of sports stars wearing them over there. And I
got to bring them back.
Could have done with some nice Zubaz during lockdown. That's the one thing I regret.
You need to bring them back.
I need to bring Zubaz back.
You need to be the person to bring them back. You need to put them on, wear them all the time. I mean, just every day you're in the Zubaz, and they go well with a nice sport coat. I think you could bring it into the forefront, my friend. That's all you.
Professor, do not threaten me with a good time.
I'm telling you, I'll send them to you.
If I'm wearing Zubaz next week, and Alex is giving me weird looks for it. It's on you. It's on you.
Send them to me.
I will. To the man. I will put her on and say, the professor made me do it.
I did. Not going to lie. It was me.
Let's do your third.
It was me, Austin.
It was me. You bought him. Oh, what a time. Your third and final match. Good, sir. So we've had Jey Uso and Roman Reigns, I Quit Hell in a Cell, Kurt Angle, Shawn Michaels from WrestleMania. What is your third and final match going to be, Professor Harrison?
My third and final match will be Hayabusa and Jinsei Shinzaki versus RVD and Sabu from Heat Wave 98.
I feel like this was a tape-traded match.
This was actually an illegal cable box match.
Nice.
Back when I was 17 years old. This was right before my 18th birthday. I was spending time with some family in South Louisiana, and they had illegal cable boxes all over the house. I don't know if I'm telling on them, but I think statute of limitations kind of protects them at this point. We're good. To any coppers that are watching, hey, chill out. They had the illegal boxes, and I remember that Heat Wave 98 was coming on while I was down there. So it's like, well, I'll sit here and watch before I go to bed. And I was just glued to the whole thing. Some great matches. Just, oh. Because I went back and watched some of it a little while ago because that was during the height of the triple threat, with Shane Douglas and Bam Bam Bigelow and Chris Candido. And they had a match with Chris Candido and Lance Storm that was really good. This was the one with Bam Bam Bigelow and Taz. That was false count anywhere in the building. They went all over They were in Dayton, Ohio, and they were all over that place. And that was the one where Ted, he sent, they went through the ramp. Because in their first match, Bam Bam put Taz through the ring. And in the second match, they ended up going through the ramp, just putting a big hole in it. And it's just, and then the Dudleyville street fight with the Dudleys versus Spike Dudley, Tommy Dreamer, and the Sandman, which was just a great match. And then God rest his soul, New Jack ends up coming in, I think, during that match. And just absolutely wrecking shop. So it was that was the height of ECW, and when they were just really, really, you know, pushing the envelope with a lot of their stuff. And this match was one that a lot of people were looking forward to, because it was a couple of, you know, guys from the Far East who were coming in, and I want to say Jinsei Shinzaki had already been in the WWE. Was his name Hakushi or something?
Hakushi, like that, the guy he was Hakushi in WWE.
Yeah. And it's just, so he had been seen over here before, but not like this. And this was during the time where RVD and Sabu were kind of at odds with each other, you know, because RVD was like, you know, the whole effing show. And he was just, they were having internal disputes with each other because, you know, Sabu is, you know, like he doesn't want RVD taking all of the credit and that kind of stuff. And that played into the match as well. But just, I look back at this match and I'm like, the stuff that a lot of people complain about with tag team wrestling now, they would have been livid watching this match, because I don't know if anybody touched a single tag rope. Nobody touched a tag rope in this match. Who cares about a tag rope? But it's kind of like this match was, for a lot of people, a precursor to the kind of tag team wrestling that we see now, with the back and forth action, the in and outs, all of that stuff. The extreme nature of the match, you know, the tables and chairs and all of this, and just the work that they're doing with each other, and, you know, how the guys are always talking about, you know, got to get your stuff in, brother. Everybody got their stuff in. But it was just a really cool match to go back and forth with. And it was the epitome of what a tag team match in ECW at that time was. And it reminds me a lot of what tag team matches tend to be at times in AEW, especially this style of match. So getting to see it, and the, you know, it was just a fun match to watch. It's always fun to me watching young Rob Van Dam in his matches. It's always just really cool to see. And I just, this is probably my favorite tag team match to watch, just even from back then. But this whole pay-per-view, like Heatwave 98, was just the epitome of what ECW was back then, was Heatwave 98.
Oh, it was the bit of everything. And I think people always assume that ECW was just all the hardcore stuff. And there was a lot of that, granted, but if you looked deeper, if you looked sort of beyond the front page of the book, you would find technical wrestling, you'd find international stars that come in from Japan and from Mexico doing stuff like this, and you'd find this tag match, which is just a beautiful, and again, it does resonate with sort of the matches that guys like FTR and the Young Bucks are having now, these frantic, fast-paced tag matches that are bringing tag wrestling back. I think that WWE, like, and as you know, they do a lot of stuff right to WWE, and I don't think they get enough credit for stuff they do right. But the one thing I feel like they've always had a love-hate relationship with is tag team wrestling. And just truly building a tag team division to be proud of. And I feel like that's where AEW is really excelling at the moment, because they have that very distinct work-based tag division that they put a lot of time and energy into. You
know? Like the matches, I think, are what really shine through with that philosophy. and how the matches are conducted. Because, you know, they had, you know, WWE has a tag division and they have some great tag teams, you know, but I don't know if they're all used in a way like this or like in the matches for AEW. You know, I don't think they're used the same way, which, to, you know, it depends on what you like, whatever meets your loaf, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, but you know, AEW, this match kind of reminds me of the kind of style that they have now with their matches. Like you said, it was a great word that you used, frantic, the frantic pace back and forth between, the, you know, the two teams and what you're able to do. And I think guys like FTR, Young Bucks, Proud and Powerful, the Lucha Brothers, Private Party, just some really, really good, the Infantry, who I dearly love. Carly, shout out to Carly Bravo and Sean Dean. Love those guys. Just the tag team division and the matches that they have are just so great. And but again, like, people who trip over a tag rope would lose their minds watching a match like this. Like, they would be absolutely livid. Like, they're not even following the rules of traditional tag team. Shut up. Shut up. Shut up. Hey, guy, look at me. Shut up. Stop. It's a great match. Why are you kidding? They're not hanging on to the rope.
You're gonna bring out heel Professor Harrison manager if you carry on like that.
Come get me, nerds. Come on.
Hey, if people want, I like how this is really grinding your gear, sir.
Like, it's just, the
tag rope.
The complete Flintstone. just so ridiculous. Jetson,
if people want to come get you, where can they find you? Where can they find you, sir? Plug away.
In the street, Tom.
I am outside your house. I'm next to your bins.
We do this in the street, son. What you want?
No, take your shoes off. Come and fight me. Queensbury rules. Let's go.
And we're not holding on to no dang tag nuts.
So take hold on to your tag nuts, mate, not your tag nuts. That's a horrible, horrible thing that I said. Happy New Year.
There are children watching, Tom. What of the children, Tom?
No, for oh, someone
that's
think
that's
of
another
the
great
children.
Part about that. That just reminded me of a line from that Roman Reigns, Jey Uso match where it's like, what am I supposed to tell my children, huh? What am I supposed to tell my kids? What am I supposed to tell my kids, Tom? Holy hell, what a
bitch. Oh, anyway, outside the street, where could people find you, Professor?
Mr. Professor 318 on all social media. If you search on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, you will find me, and I am there. We just passed 875,000 followers on TikTok, and I cannot thank folks enough that. And Twitter, I spend a lot of time on Twitter, and as you probably know, just interacting with people and talking back and forth because I love the interaction so much. So yeah, that's where you'll find me on social media. Looking to do some really big things in 2022. And this is going to be a great year. And it's already started great because I've been talking to you. And as you know, Tom, I cannot end a broadcast or stop doing something online without saying, you know, for anybody who's watching, if you have not been told today, you are loved, you are appreciated, you are important, you are more than enough exactly as you are, and always you're going to be great.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.